check here is clearly a typographical error. It was never intended. It appears actually in the printed version and should be stricken. Never intended.
Is that the response?
Yes, that's in the response.
Report.
Yes. Mr. Shively, would you state your name for the record?
John Terry Shively.
Mr. Shively, I wish to inform you that your testimony before the grand jury has been made a part of the official record of this proceeding. Also, the entire record of the grand jury proceeding has been made a part of this proceeding. Have you ever held a position in the administration of Governor Sheffield?
Yes, sir.
Could you tell the committee what position that was?
Chief of Staff.
And when did you hold it? From when to when?
From December of 1983 through July of this year.
Do you still hold the position?
No, sir.
When did you resign?
July 10th.
Could you tell the committee for what reasons you resigned that position?
I resigned because I felt my actions in misstating the truth to Chief Prosecutor Dan Hickey meant that public trust could no longer be held by me. I think that by continuing to hold the office, I was potentially doing damage to the governor, and it was appropriate that I resign.
Would you please explain to the committee the office or position of Chief of Staff and what your duties were?
Basically, the Chief of Staff, as it is operating in the Sheffield administration, is the second in command of the operation of government after the governor. I had a number of responsibilities. Commissioners reported to me. The governor's staff reported to me. I worked with the legislature. I helped to develop the budget. I was part of most, if not all, major policy issues and a number of not-so-major policy issues. I spent time with constituents, both in meetings and on the phone.
Now, Mr. Shively, I'm going to go over with you in questioning some of the facts that you've already testified before the grand jury. However, I have no intention of rehashing your entire testimony before the grand jury. Instead, I would like to focus your attention on your relationship with Mr. Lenny Arsenault, the governor, and meetings or discussions that you've had with him. This committee has been referred by the grand jury certain allegations concerning a sole source state office space lease agreement with Fifth Avenue Center. What, if anything, did you know, Mr. Shively, about Mr. Arsenault's interest in that building?
Well, at some point during my tenure as Chief of Staff, I believe sometime in the late winter, early spring of 1984, I became aware that he had an ownership interest in that building.
Were you aware of what kind of ownership interest that was?
No, sir.
Did there come a time when you learned of the governor's interest in the Fifth Avenue Center?
I think I first became aware of the governor's interest in the Fifth Avenue Center sometime either in late December or early January, December of 1983 or January of 1984.
Could you tell us how that subject came up?
I was in his office, as I often am, and we were covering a variety of subjects, and he took out a brochure on a building and said he thought this would make a good place for consolidation of state office space in Fairbanks.
Were there other occasions when the governor expressed that interest in the building?
Other occasions in what time period?
From the time that he brought out that brochure to the time that Mr. Arsenault met with the governor on October 2, 1984.
Yes.
Can you just give us some of those occasions and describe them?
I can't remember specific occasions. I do know that the subject came up several times. Once, I think in June, we were in Fairbanks. We discussed that building as a potential consolidation. Three times in the spring, I would guess we discussed it as a potential location. I think that it was obvious that if you wanted to me, and I believe to the governor, that if you wanted to consolidate space in Fairbanks, you wanted to try to get as close as possible to the existing state office building, and this building was a logical candidate because of its location.
Well, following these expressions of interest by the governor in the Fifth Avenue Center, did you hold a series of meetings with the Department of Natural Resources about the consolidation of their offices in downtown Fairbanks?
Yes, I did.
And could you tell the committee what you were seeking to accomplish in those meetings?
Well, my recollection, excuse me, sir. My recollection was that I got approached by DNR because they needed new office space. Their present office in Fairbanks is in what I think are World War II vintage buildings, a little close to the edge of town, And those buildings really are no longer suitable for habitation, particularly in the kind of winter weather that Fairbanks has. So when they approached me, it was my idea, and I think the governor's also, but I don't recollect that for sure, but I know it was my idea that if we were going to consolidate and if DNR needed new office space, then we ought to try to consolidate everybody downtown. And that was our initial approach. We had a series of meetings on that. DNR, in the process of reviewing a downtown location with some of the needs that they had, particularly as it related to their firefighting responsibilities and their laboratories that they have, convinced me that it was not appropriate for them to be in downtown Fairbanks.
During those meetings and in your discussions with DNR, did you report back to the governor or keep the governor apprised of what you were learning?
I don't recall whether I did or not.
Would it be your normal practice to keep the governor advised with regard to the consolidation of office space in Fairbanks?
Not necessarily.
Is it your duty, by the way? Do you have a particular responsibility with regard to that program of consolidating office space in Fairbanks?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that question.
Well, what responsibility did you have with regard to that project?
What responsibility? You mean, like, did somebody order me, or is it in my job description? I don't know.
Yes, I mean, did you have a particular assignment to carry out the governor's program?
Well, I think the job of the chief of staff is to work for the governor and to try to get things accomplished. There's no question that the governor had a desire to consolidate office space in Fairbanks. He suggested that was one of the projects that I might be working on, I think probably as early as December of 1983. So I considered it my responsibility to help oversee that, not necessarily to accomplish it, but it was something that I had on my desk, because I think I indicated to the grand jury early on I didn't think that the project was probably that important. It, you know, to be perfectly frank, was not of great personal interest to me. But as I began to see the difficulties with how the different agencies had different needs, and also later on was made aware of the interest of the entire Fairbanks legislative delegation for consolidation, it became something that I took more and more a part of.
Well, since you say that, you know, it was your responsibility as chief of staff to work for the governor, how did you report back to the governor? Did you have a procedure by which you reported back to the governor what you were doing on any of the things you did?
Our general reporting procedure was, periodically he might ask me, and if he asked me, I would report to him. If a major event took place, I would try to report to him. Both of us had busy schedules. What I usually did was keep a file of sort of notes behind my desk, and then we would try at least once or twice a week, assuming we were both in the same city, to get together and discuss what he had on his desk for me and what I had for him. Otherwise, I might be in his office on a variety of issues, and I might just say, well, we might get through with a meeting, and I might say, oh, by the way, this is happening on the Fairbanks office lease.
So would you have included in that file that you had on your desk some of the things you're doing with regard to the consolidation project?
It is possible.
And if you did, you would be discussing it with the governor?
Yes, sir.
Do you recall having a meeting about June 18, 1984, with the governor and the late Commissioner Rudd of the Department of Administration?
No, sir.
Do you recall the testimony in the grand jury that there was such a meeting in Fairbanks?
I don't recall the testimony, sir, because I have not read it. I do recollect that either Mr. Frampton or Mr. Hickey raised that meeting with me during my testimony.
And did they raise to you the fact that Commissioner Rudd testified that it was her impression at that meeting that the governor had an interest in the Fifth Avenue or the Borough Building for the consolidation?
An interest or a preference?
Well, even a preference. I'll take your word, Mr. Shockley.
My recollection was that the word was preference. Yes, I believe that was raised with me by the prosecutor.
Now, but is it your testimony that you really don't recall that meeting or that statement by Commissioner Rudd?
I recall neither, that is my best. I recall neither the statement nor the meeting. Now, we had a number of meetings with Commissioner Rudd, so it would be unlikely that a particular meeting would stand out in my mind. In addition, generally when we met with Commissioner Rudd, both she and the governor had a list of issues to go over. So,
do you recall your testimony, Mr. Shively, that even though you may not have recalled that meeting, her testimony did describe a real desire on the governor's part, or as you understood it, that he had that preference in that building?
Yes, I remember my testimony, and as I stated a number of times in the grand jury, the governor did express a preference for the building. Again, in our discussions about that building, the discussions particularly in the spring, were primarily based on its location and the logical location of that building in relation to our other state office building.
So with that desire and that view, would it be true that you and the governor did encourage the use of the Fifth Avenue Center for the consolidation of office space?
We encouraged the review of it, and I think it's clear from the grand jury record that several times we asked about it. There were a series, or at least a couple, one memorandum I recollect from April 10th, discussing the possible use of that building and whether or not there could be a sole source bid from Mr. Link, I believe it was, through Commissioner Rudd and myself.
Did the governor ever tell you that Mr. Arsenal had talked to him, the governor, about the using of the Fifth Avenue Center prior to October 2, 1984?
Yes.
Could you just briefly tell us on what occasion or occasions and how that came up?
I don't really remember. I do remember one point, Mr. Arsenal, it was in Juneau. I got introduced to him. I think at that time I was made aware that he had an interest in the building. That would have been sometime in the late winter or early spring of 1984.
Yeah. Who is Lenny Arsenal?
He's an officer in the Plumber and Steamfitters Union in Fairbanks.
What, if any, relationship does he have with the governor?
Well, I think the relationship that's been pointed out is, I believe he's a friend. He's also a fundraiser. He's raised funds for the governor's campaign.
Well, would it be fair to say that he is both his friend, political supporter, and financial supporter of the governor?
In addition, I think he's been one of the key advisors to the governor on the local hire issue, which is a major issue in the state.
Did there come a time when you learned that the governor had sent a copy of the original request for proposal, or RFP, to Mr. Arsenal?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Could you tell us how you learned of that and by whom?
My recollection that Laurie Herman told me that she had sent Mr. Arsenal a copy of the draft RFP.
Was that information that you received that she had sent it at any particular direction?
The direction of the governor's.
And did that information include why the governor sent it? I mean, did he receive any requests for it?
It's my understanding, yes, that he had been requested to send it by Mr. Arsenal.
When you learned of that, Mr. Shively, did you have a reaction to the governor doing that?
I think, as I indicated in my testimony to the grand jury, I was a little bit uncomfortable about it.
Why?
Well, I just thought it was one of those things that if it became public, would not look very good for the governor.
Became public that he sent it?
Yes.
Did you understand that RFP was not available to the public and could not be sent?
I didn't know enough to know whether it was available or wasn't, but it's the kind of thing that whether it is or isn't, when people in the press want to make an issue of something, it's the kind of thing that they like to write about. So I was concerned about it.
So you thought that this was something that could create a problem for the governor if it became a matter of public disclosure or news?
Public perception.
Excuse me. Now, Mr. Shively, on or about October 2, 1984, were you called into a meeting in Governor Sheffield's office? Do you recall that?
Yes, sir.
And who else, if anybody, was there besides the governor?
I assume you're talking about the meeting with Mr. Arsenal. I mean, on or about October 2nd, I was probably in the governor's office a number of times, but I was called to a meeting.
Let me draw your attention to a particular meeting on October 2, 1984, where Mr. Arsenal was meeting with the governor. Were you called into such a meeting?
Yes, sir.
Would you describe that meeting, and particularly, could you tell the committee what you understood the nature of the meeting to be, who participated in that meeting, what the subject of the meeting was?
Well, best I can recollect the events of that day, I was sitting in my office. I either got buzzed by the governor to come into his office or asked by his secretary to come in. I came in. Mr. Arsenal was in the office with the governor, and there was no one else in the office at the time. I don't have specific recollection of the conversation that took place there, but it's clear from the rest of events that took place around Mr. Arsenal's being on the third floor that day that he was there to discuss some changes in the RFP for the Fairbanks office.
As a matter of fact, Shively, do you recall his bringing with him or having in his hand any piece of paper, map, or...
He brought with him a piece of paper that had on it, among other things, a description of an area in Fairbanks, in downtown Fairbanks.
And did you receive that piece of paper?
Yes, sir.
And did you read it, look at it?
Yes, sir.
Do you know whether the governor looked at it or received it or saw it?
No, I don't.
Well, is it possible in this meeting that the governor would not have seen the piece of paper?
I don't know whether he would have seen the piece of paper, but clearly, at least I think some of the issues were discussed there. I particularly remember us discussing the boundary issue, because the boundary was a written description, and we couldn't tell what that meant. So I remember at one point me going out of the governor's office and looking for a map of Fairbanks to see if we could take the written description and put it on a map.
Oh, did you understand that the governor also wanted to know what that description meant on the map?
Yes.
And did you find the map?
No.
Could you tell the committee now what your, and I think you indicated that you have an understanding as to what it was that Mr. Arsenal wanted to ask the governor to do with regard to the RFP. Could you give us your best recollection of what it was that that Mr. Arsenal wanted the governor to do with that RFP?
My recollection is that he wanted two changes in the RFP, one related to the boundaries of the area in which the building would be located, and the other related to when the space would be occupied. He wanted to change the date to July 1st, 1985.
With regard to changing the boundaries, if the changes were made as requested by Mr. Arsenal, could you tell us what result that would have in terms of who could bid on that request for proposal?
Well, basically, it would have, as I saw it, eliminated the competitive bidding process, because the boundary limitation would have brought it down to one building, and therefore there would have had to have been a sole source.
And that building was the Fifth Avenue Center.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us what would happen if the date change? Do you know what that change was? Do you recall it?
Yes. As I understand it, this is not recollection from that time. It's what I've learned actually since my testimony in the grand jury. The RFP itself had suggested office space that could be occupied any time between July 1st of 1985 and January 1st of 1986. It's in itself sort of an unusual part of any kind of bid package for lease space, but I guess that's maybe not all that relevant. And changing it to July 1st would have meant that you would have had to use existing space, because we're now in October of 1984, and it is very unlikely that people could have built new space that would have been available by July 1st of 1985.
So even if you provided the change that Mr. Arsenal wanted with regard to the boundary, but kept the original dates in the original request for proposal, there could have been competition through
the... It would seem that, although it is my understanding that there is another builder in Fairbanks who had a, quote, hole in the ground, who felt that they might be able to make a July 1st date, but it seemed that the July 1st date in itself would have.
So the two together, it's your testimony, I take it, would have precluded all competition and would have left the only bidder the Fifth Avenue Center.
The only building, yes.
Yes, the only building. Well, the only qualified bidder.
Well, we didn't go to bid.
I'm talking about at the time of the meeting of October 2nd, 1984, when all, I take it your testimony is that all that was before you was an RFP that was being asked to change.
That's correct, but it's absolutely clear in my mind, if you eliminate all but one bidder, that you have to be able to have a sole source justification, and there had to be some public policy reason to get at that sole source justification, that you would never put out a bid when you knew there was only one bidder.
Well, did you discuss that in that meeting, that this would mean now they have to go sole source?
I don't recollect that.
No.
It was my understanding. In which meeting? The meeting with the governor?
I'm talking now still on October 2nd, 1984, the meeting with the governor and Mr. Arsenal.
Not in the meeting with the governor and Mr. Arsenal. I don't recollect whether we did or not in the meeting with the
governor.
It wouldn't
refresh your recollection if you know that Mr. Arsenal testified that was one of the options that he suggested, other than a change of boundaries and date.
It doesn't. I know I discussed it with him. My recollection is when I discussed it with him was in my own office, and I had a meeting with him after I was in the governor's office.
Did the governor express any disagreement with these proposed changes in the RFP?
It is not my recollection whether he expressed agreement or disagreement.
If these recommendations were being made in the governor's office by Mr. Arsenal and he disagreed, would he have expressed them?
I would suspect so, yes.
And he would have communicated that to you, would he not?
Yes, sir.
Did that occur? As a matter of fact, didn't the governor indicate a willingness to accommodate Mr. Arsenal and these changes?
I don't have any recollection of what the governor did or didn't. indicate to me directly at that meeting. All I know is what my frame of mind was when I came out of that meeting and what my frame of mind continued to be throughout the next month as the changes were made and we went to a sole source designation. And that frame of mind was if those changes were appropriate and legal, then yes, we would do them. But if they were inappropriate and illegal, they would be not. We would not do them.
Would you have that frame of mind, Mr. Shively, if the governor didn't want these changes?
The governor didn't want those changes. I would not have had that change of frame
of mind. So is it fair to say, Mr. Shively, that you had that frame of mind because you believed that that's what the governor wanted?
We're going to get into semantics here, and of course this is pretty critical to the case, but I don't believe the governor... Well, let me say it this way. The governor, as we've already discussed, had a preference for that building, and that preference was based on a couple things. First of all, and the first time we ever discussed that building, it had to do with its location, and the location made sense. And I don't think we would have been involved in this, no matter who owned that building or what part of it they owned, unless the location itself made sense. But it is clear that the governor did have a preference for that building, and I knew that. And yes, my frame of mind was to try to make those suggestions work if they were legal and were reasonable.
Well, I'm not trying to engage in semantics, Mr. Shively. I don't want to press you into testifying on a matter on anything that you don't recall. But I think am I correct in saying that your testimony before the grand jury indicated that you had an impression from that meeting that at least the governor would want you to check this out with the Department of Administration to see if it was doable.
Yes, sir.
Is that a fair statement?
Yes, sir.
Would the governor, in a meeting with Mr. Arsenal of this kind, take a participant role? Would he participate in the meeting? I'm not asking you. You can't recall what he said, but he would. I would take it that he would say things. He'd speak if Mr. Arsenal spoke. It is not your testimony that he was sitting at another far part of the office reading mail and not paying attention.
That is not my testimony.
So it is your understanding, or at least recollection, that the governor participated at the meeting, and would it also be true that the governor was aware of what Mr. Arsenal wanted in terms of changes at the meeting?
He might have been aware of what the wording was, but I think the technicalities were not necessarily something that he was familiar with. As a matter of fact, as it's even clear to me, because of the confusion that existed between myself and the Department of Administration about whether, when they thought I wanted to go out with an RFP when I knew there was only one bidder and I knew there was sole source, even I, who am in charge of taking care of some of these details, didn't understand it that well. I think he understood, perhaps, that Mr. Arsenault wanted changes, but I do not believe that the governor understood what those changes meant in terms of the bid process.
No, I'm not asking that question. I'm asking, did the governor understand, as a participant in the meeting, and I take it, having heard what Mr. Arsenal wanted, that if those changes were made, this would leave only one building that was qualified in the RFP.
Mr. Dash, you're asking Mr. Shively to speculate as to what was in the governor's mind at the time the meeting occurred? Is that what your question's aimed at?
No, Mr. Shively has testified what he understood the meeting was, and I'm asking whether or not he was aware, or at least it was clear to him, and only clear to him, whether the governor was aware of what Mr. Shively was saying as to the boundaries and the effect on the RFP if those changes were made.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Did you testify to the grand jury that you were clear that he was aware of the that Mr. Arsenal was asking for changes of the boundaries?
You're asking two questions now. One, yes, I testified that he was aware of the change of the boundary. Now, then you asked me previously whether he was aware of the impact on the RFP, and I think that's a different question. And yes, I know he did have some awareness, at least the boundaries were going to be changed, because we talked about the boundaries. At least that would be my assumption.
Mr. Shively, you didn't have any doubt in your mind, and I think you've so testified today, that if those changes were made, the boundaries and the date, this really wasn't an RFP anymore. It would have been sole source, because you're dealing with only one building.
That's correct.
Is there any reason for the governor not to have that same understanding, having been in the room, heard all of the discussion? Did you have some information that he didn't have?
Well, I don't know, because I do recollect that it was a very detailed conversation with Mr. Arsenal and myself in my office after the meeting with the governor, where he went over this sort of line by line. So you know, I can't sit here and speculate as to what the governor did or didn't understand.
All right, let me.
I won't do it.
All right, just let me leave it at this. And I think you've testified to this. That you were present at the meeting, the governor was present at the meeting, you both heard Mr. Arsenal's request, and you had no doubt what the consequences of that request would be if made.
But I'm not sure whether the lack of doubt occurred because of what occurred in the governor's office or what occurred in the governor's office and in my office afterwards. I do know that we did specifically deal with the boundary change in the governor's office.
Do you recall testifying in the grand jury that at the meeting in the governor's office, you were aware that if those boundaries were changed and that date changed, that this would, in fact, lead to a sole source and just one building?
I don't recall that, but I will today.
We'll find it. We'll present it to you and ask if that is a correct statement. Now, Mr. Shively, did you follow through on what you understood Mr. Arsenal wanted and expressed in the meeting in October 2 with the governor?
Yes.
What did you do?
I called Anselm Stack of the Department of Administration.
And could you just describe for us or tell us the nature of that meeting, what you said to Mr. Stack, the best of recollection, generally, and what his response to you was, if any?
My best recollection is I called him in, I discussed two issues with him, changing of the use of the space to July 1st, 1985, and the change of the boundaries. And he said he would look into it for me and left.
Could you now follow up? Did he look into it for you, and did he report back to you?
Yes.
And what, if anything, did he say?
Well, I don't recollect him reporting back on the July 1st date. It was changed, so my only assumption can be that that was acceptable. I do remember him reporting back to me on the boundary designation a couple days later, and I think I was in Anchorage. I got a set of three maps from Mr. Stack. One, the original boundaries as proposed in the RFP. Two, the boundaries as proposed by Mr. Arsenal, and a sort of third boundary that was in between the two that had been developed, I guess, by somebody in DOA, and with a suggestion that we review the boundaries suggested by Mr. Arsenal because they were very limited and did not include either the state office building or the court building, both of which we own in downtown Fairbanks. I concurred that the smaller boundary was not acceptable, and we settled on the middle boundary.
Even on the middle boundary?
Yes.
And the date which Mr. Arsenal wished, did that leave any opportunity for competition through other bidders or buildings?
It did not. The date itself, as I said, I really don't recollect when he got back to me or how he got back to me, but there is something in the record that would show me that the department themselves may have had to change the date to July 1st because there's a memo of October 2nd to me from Commissioner Rudd indicating a desire on the part of the Department of Administration to move all the people in the Fairbanks Regional Office Building into the new office space effective July 1st, 1985, and then rehabilitate the old office space and move other people into that after the renovation. And if that had been accomplished, then the department itself would have had to change the date.
Can you give us any idea as to when that memo was written with regard to your meeting with Mr. Stack the same morning of October 2?
I don't remember when I received it, Mr. Dash. All I know is it's dated October 2nd.
The memo is dated October 2nd?
Yes, sir.
But in any event, after your meeting with Mr. Stack, and taking into account the change that was made with regard to middle zones, you were able to, in fact, accomplish the changes that Mr. Arsenal wanted.
Well, not all the changes he wanted, since he wanted a different boundary, but we did come up with the same result, which was that we ended up with a sole source bid, yes.
Do you know whether he was satisfied with the new boundary?
My understanding that he was.
Yes, and as I asked you before, with that new boundary, did it really change, add any new possible buildings that could qualify under the RFP?
No.
With these changes, then, the July 1 date and the middle zone boundary, are you aware of any problem that Mr. Stock raised with you concerning that RFP as it then stood?
I am now, but I was not at the time.
Well, did he talk to you about it?
Would you rephrase the original question?
All right, let me restate the question. Did Mr. Stock ever tell you after the RFP was changed in terms of the boundary and the date that this looked like a bid rigging and was inappropriate for an RFP?
I don't know if he put it in those terms. He said that you could not go out to bid, and I recollect having a conversation with him, and I said, that's fine. We'll do it by sole source if there can be a sole source justification. It was after that, as I recollect, there was a memo that was signed by Mr. Link indicating the same thing, that we couldn't go out for bid and because it would be a sham because there was only one bidder. I basically didn't deal with that memo because I thought I'd already dealt with it with Mr. Stack, but apparently I had not. It came again to the Attorney General's office, as I now understand it. They said that you can't go out with an RFP with only one bidder, and I said, fine. If there's a justification, sole source justification, we'll do it sole source justification. There's no question in my mind because of what I've seen in the newspaper and some of what I've been told about other people's testimony in the grand jury, that there was confusion in the mind of DOA people about what I wanted, and there were a number of people in DOA who felt that I wanted to send out an RFP with only one bidder, and that was never my intent.
Well, Mr. Shively, your discussion with Mr. Stock on the morning of October 2, right after the meeting with the governor, Mr. Arsenal, was directed towards the RFP and making those changes, was it
not? That's right, and again, as I mentioned earlier today, part of that is just my ignorance of bidding. I mean, in my own mind, I knew that if you had one bidder, you had a sole source. But I did deal with it in terms of changes to the RFP, and I can understand how that message was translated to the bureaucracy. I don't consider it a misinterpretation necessarily on my part. On their part, it's just a problem that I have with not understanding all the sort of nuts and bolts of how government works.
All right, so in any event, after your discussion with Mr. Stock, the discussions back and forth about the appropriateness of a RFP, or remaining an RFP where you only get one bidder, it ended up as a sole source negotiation.
That is correct.
All right. Now, in your testimony to the grand jury, Mr. Shively, you said that at some point you reported to the governor that, quote, these changes were acceptable and would probably lead to a sole source bid. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
By these changes, is it a fact that you meant the ones Mr. Arsenal had asked for?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I?
Mr. Lacavara?
Mr. Dash, I think, was quoting from a transcript. If I understood him correctly, we would appreciate the transcript reference.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get that for you, and we'll go back to another question.
Thank you. Could we have the question repeated, please?
Yes. The question is, in your testimony to the grand jury, you said that at some point you reported to the governor that these changes were acceptable. That was in quote. And would probably lead to a sole source bid. And the question was, by these changes, is it fair to say that you meant the ones Mr. Arsenal asked for at the October 2 meeting? And we'll... On the objection of counsel, I want to ask you to answer that question now, and we'll come back to it, and we'll be able to provide you with the transcript.
Well, I have the reference, Mr. Dash, if you want to take it up now.
Yeah, would you give us the page, huh?
It's Shively transcript, page 56, and it's not, I mean, unless you're referring to some other portion of Mr. Shively's testimony, it's not as you characterize it, I'm afraid.
No, it's another second. We'll have it, and we'll give it to you. At least, let's go back again to the premise of the question, which is that you did testify at the grand jury that at some point you reported to the governor that the changes had been found acceptable. Did the governor say anything that would indicate that he didn't understand what you're talking about?
No, and thinking back about what I did, since this has become an important part of this proceeding, if you would permit me, I can explain to you my recollection of how that report took place and in what context.
Please.
It was my recollection that I was in his office, that I was on my way out of the office, and I was at the other end of the room from him, and on my way out, I said something to the effect, oh, by the way, I think we'll be able to do a sole source bid on the Fairbanks office lease. At this point, I don't have any specific recollection whether I said we'd made the changes Lenny wanted or anything like that, but I do recollect reporting back to him that it looked to me like there would be a sole source justification.
I think we have the reference, Counsel, and I'll go right to it. It's on page, if you have volume 10, do you have volume 10?
I have a transcript of Mr. Shively's testimony.
All right, on that, you go to 33. And on about halfway down the page, there's an answer. The question is, do you think you probably did report it to him? And the answer, and I go down to the last sentence of that answer, at some point I remember reporting to him that these changes were acceptable and would probably lead to a sole source bid justification. Does that refresh your recollection, Mr. Chapman? So you did, in fact, report to the governor that these changes. And now, having referred to the transcript, I'd like to ask my question again, that by these changes, were these the changes that emanated originally from the meeting in October 2, the kinds of changes that Mr. Arsenal had requested?
Yes, sir.
And then, and I don't believe we've really got your complete answer, because it may have been interrupted. My question then was, did the governor say anything that would indicate that he didn't understand what you were talking about?
No, sir.
During your tenure in office, Mr. Shively, how many times have you asked the Department of Administration or any other agency to alter an RFP to tailor it so that only one bidder could meet the terms?
I didn't ask them to do it. I asked them if they could do it.
All right, I'll rephrase my question. You asked if it could be done, even if it's doable, or however you want to rephrase that. Has there been any other occasion when you asked the Department of Administration to look into that?
There was some discussion of it in relation to the consolidation of DNR in Anchorage, as to whether or not we would use a building that Mr. Zamarillo owned, or whether or not we would sole source into the Frontier Office building, and it was not the same kind of detailed suggestion, but there was discussion of sole source bid between myself and the Department of Administration.
Well, that isn't the question I asked you, Mr. Shively. I'm not asking whether or not you ever discussed a sole source bid and not go through competitive bid. The question is that after an RFP had been drafted up and approved, which provided for competitive bidding, is there any other occasion when you asked the Department of Administration, if it's doable, to change the RFP in such a way as to leave room for only one bidder?
Not to my recollection.
During your time in office as chief of staff, how many times has the governor, to your knowledge, been asked to see whether an RFP can be changed, if it's doable, so that only one bidder could qualify, to your knowledge?
Oh, let's see. It's come up on... The idea has come up on...
Can you stay within the frame of my question? After an RFP has been prepared and approved, which permits competitive bidding, to your knowledge, has the governor... Besides this instance, ever been asked to request whether it's doable to change that RFP so it will result in only one bidder?
None to my knowledge.
Mr. Chairman, we're right.
Committee, come back to order, please. I note the attendance of all Rules Committee members present. We are hearing testimony from John Shively, the former chief of staff to Governor Sheffield. Mr. Shively was sworn in this afternoon. Mr. Shively, I remind you, you're still under oath, sir.
Yes, sir.
We'll continue the the questioning of Mr. Shively by the Senate Chief Counsel, Mr. Sam Dash.
Mr. Shively, did you or the governor, to your knowledge, receive any calls from Mr. Arsenal or anyone else concerning the negotiations on the sole source lease with the Fifth Avenue Center?
Yes.
Could you describe for us somewhat the nature of these calls, what Mr. Arsenal was talking about?
Well, in general, when he called me and he talked about the speed of the negotiations, I think was his primary concern.
And what did you do, if anything, if he called you about that?
I generally called Anselm Stack and asked him what was going on and if I could give you a specific example.
Well, could you give us particularly on when you said the speed of negotiations? For instance, did Mr. Arsenal complain that the negotiations were being delayed?
Yes, the first call, as I recollect, that I got was somewhere around mid-December, I think the 18th or 19th of December of 1984, and Mr. Arsenal called and said originally they thought negotiations had been scheduled for the week before Christmas, and now the Department of Administration was talking about putting off negotiations until after Christmas or maybe after the first of the year, and he asked if anything could be done to speed that up. I called Mr. Stack and asked him, and as my understanding is, as all that call, there were some further phone calls, and a date of December 26 was set for the first negotiation.
So, as a result of your call, the negotiations were expedited?
At least there was a meeting. I don't know if the negotiations themselves
were. Well, did you learn whether other members or other staff members of the Department of Administration were concerned about that change in the speed of the negotiations or meeting?
Not during those negotiations, no, sir.
Yeah, but you did later learn about that.
Yes, after after reading the story in the Fairbanks Newsline.
Could you just tell us something about that? Who was it, for instance, that expressed some concern?
It's my recollection that Mr. Peterson expressed some concern.
Were you ever shown a memorandum that he wrote concerning that issue?
Not to my recollection.
In addition to calls that you received from Mr. Arsenal, were you aware of calls that Mr. Arsenal were also placing with the governor?
I don't have, at least at this point, any recollection of calls to the governor. There may have been some, but as I sort of see this thing unfolding, I think after the sole source bid designation was made, the bulk of the calls came to me.
But there were times where they're not, Mr. Shively, that you would get a call from the governor who would tell you that Mr. Arsenal called, and then you would take it on. I mean, you recall the governor telling you that he had got a call from Mr. Arsenal and relaying it to you.
I don't have any specific recollection of a call like that, but I'm not saying it couldn't have taken place.
Did you yourself discuss the calls, or any of the calls that you got from Mr. Arsenal during the negotiations with the governor?
I don't know whether I discussed any of the calls. I did discuss an issue with the governor, and that was that at one point when I raised the issue with Mr. Stock about negotiations, Mr. Stock said, well, one of the problems is that their price seems to be very high. And so I indicated to the governor that if he was talking to Mr. Arsenal, he might indicate to him that this was serious negotiations and they should negotiate seriously with the state.
So at least on that occasion, the governor was informed about how the negotiations were going as to that issue. And are you aware whether the governor did speak to Mr. Arsenal?
My recollection that he did.
You know when that occurred and what was the nature of the discussion?
I know.
Was there a time that came to your attention when the Department of Administration decided that they should break off negotiations because they could not get an acceptable price?
Well, I was never notified by the Department of Administration that they had broken off negotiations because they could not get an acceptable price. I was called, I think, sometime in January of this year by Mr. Cook, indicating that he thought that that Mr. Peterson was going to make a recommendation that the price that they had come to was not acceptable and that the lease should be turned down.
You spoke to Mr. Stock about that?
Yes, I did.
And at that time, when you spoke to Mr. Stock, did he give you or show you a memorandum that reflected the fact that there was a decision at least to recommend breaking off negotiations?
Not at that particular time. I think when I first called him, he said he didn't know anything about it. He then went back and checked. There was the memorandum from Mr. Peterson that he showed me, and he said at the time that, well, this isn't final. We have one more analysis to do. We do a present value kind of analysis, and when we're done with that, I'll get back to you. And I said, fine.
Now, did you receive a call from Mr. Arsenal at another time complaining that the lease hadn't been signed?
Yes, sir.
Tell us something about that call. What was the concern, if expressed to you by Mr. Arsenal, concerning the signing of the lease?
My recollection that they had some problems with their financing and that they needed a lease signed.
And what, if anything, did you do after you got that call?
I called Mr. Stock and asked him why the lease wasn't signed. By that time, the Department of Administration had indicated to me that they had found the rate acceptable.
Excuse me. Let me go back a minute, Mr. Shively, to the question I asked a little while earlier as to whether or not there were at times or occasions when Mr. Arsenal would call the governor and the governor would call you. I think your testimony was that you didn't recall those particular occasions.
You asked after the sole source bid designation, as I recollect. Is that correct?
After the sole source... are you saying after the sole source negotiation began?
That's right.
Yeah. Were there such occasions prior to the negotiations, but during the consideration of the either changing the request for proposal or entering into a sole source contract?
Not to my recollection. The governor was out of the country for a good deal of that.
Well, could you refer to page 200 in the transcript of testimony? That's the volume that I think you have on the testimony of... John Schneidley.
Chairman.
Mr. Conway.
Could I inquire what page number that is in the transcript?
I think you can find, even in number 10, that same number appears. It's 2408, I think. But you'll notice that the original pagination also appears. May I refer you to the question at the top? Which reads, Mr. Arsenal called the governor a number of times on this project, if which the governor would in one way or another communicate to you that he had received some kind of communication from Mr. Arsenal about the project. Isn't that correct? Your answer, that is correct. Does that refresh your recollection?
Yeah, but when I was talking about the project in that regard, I was talking about the total length of time, which really spans all, from when I came to work in December of 1983 up through the final negotiations. I don't believe that question was specifically related to the time period that you pointed out. And I know there were calls, and I know there were times that the governor talked to me about those calls. But what I'm saying is I don't have any specific recollection as to whether or not those calls came during the bid negotiations.
Well, actually, when were you first aware of the fact that Mr. Arsenal was calling the governor about this project?
Calling or talking to him, I guess sometime in the spring of 1984.
Because I think your testimony was that you were aware of Mr. Arsenal's interest, but is it a fact that that interest really began to manifest itself directly just about prior to the October meeting in 1984?
No, I don't think that's correct.
Were there some of these calls, to your knowledge, after the October 2nd meeting of 1984?
Not to my recollection.
But your answer here, would that incorporate such a period?
Well, the life of the project is the life of the project, yes.
So that would include after the October 2 meeting?
That's right.
Mr. Dash, I think the last series of questions and answers is confusing. I'm concerned that the record may be quoted for a proposition that's contrary to what Mr. Shively intends. I think if you ask Mr. Shively what his memory is as to what calls he is aware of were received by the governor before and after October 2nd, you'll get an answer that's more direct and I think clearer for the reader of such a transcript to understand at some later date.
Well, Mr. Shively, do you have a recollection of these calls from the governor indicating that Mr. Arsenal had called him?
I do have a recollection that happened, yes.
And your answer... And your testimony to the grand jury was that this occurred a number of occasions.
That's correct.
Yeah. And is your testimony now that none of those occasions occurred after October 2, 1984?
Not to my recollection.
But they could have.
They could have. I'm not saying they didn't. I just don't have any recollection of specific times.
No, I understood your answer before, that you were saying that there were a number of these calls, and they were through the life of the project, and they could have been after as well as before.
Well, that's not exactly what he's saying, Mr. Dash. I mean, I know that that may be what you want to...
Am I mischaracterizing your question, your answer?
Am
I mischaracterizing your answer, Mr. Snyder?
Well, you've got me, I must say, a little confused, sir, but... when I discussed this with the grand jury, I don't think we discussed specific time periods. You know, was it in June? Was it in October? They discussed what is about a 15-month time period.
I'm not trying to get you to say something that didn't occur. I'm not trying to confuse you. I want your recollection and your best recollection whether the calls from Mr. Arsenal to the governor to you occurred or during the period of the life of the project.
There were some calls during the period of the life of the project. Right. And I define that period as the time between, say, December or January of 83 through February of 85.
And therefore, is that answer consistent with, or you intend to communicate to the committee, that some of those calls could have occurred after the October 2, 1984 meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I must object to this line of questioning.
Mr. Lacovara, we're extending the courtesy to the Chief Counsel of the Senate to ask his questions to Mr. Shively uninterrupted, sir.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
No, I don't think so, Mr. Lacovara. We'll continue with the questioning, and you can raise those questions at a later date. Please continue, sir.
Is there a question on the floor, Mr. Nash?
Yes. I'm probably repeating the question, but I will one last time.
I think we're making more of this than we really need to, and I don't want to get into a big debate with the Senate.
Senator Fagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my problem is I don't object to the governor's counsel interjecting and maybe having some comments and corrections, but I don't know who that gentleman is sitting next to Mr. Shively, and I don't know why he's interjecting and getting to talk. I guess that's my problem.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Justice.
I think we have a procedural issue here because the rule we adopted, Rule A, says that objections relating to the scope and manner of the presentation of evidence may be raised only by a member of the Senate or the governor's counsel. And that may confirm Senator Fake's concern, but and shall be ruled upon by the chair or presiding member. But I believe that that clearly gives Mr. Lacovara the right to interject objections, and that they are entitled to be heard and ruled upon by the chair. I say with all respect. Otherwise, they become moot, and the evidence is received without knowing what the objection is, and then we are going to be told to strike out our memories or expunge things from the record. I think I respectfully ask that he be allowed to make his objections, and then. And the chair rule on
the matter made
timely.
Mr. Senator Josephson, it's imperative that the questions asked by the chief counsel of the witness, and again, when we get to the governor's attorney of the witness, be allowed to proceed without interrupting the line of questioning. As a courtesy to yourself, sir, we will listen to Mr. Lacovara on this one point, but I hope that it doesn't become a habit. Mr. Lacovara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assure you it will not become a habit. We had made no objections at all during the earlier examination of Mr. Shively. The basis for my assertion that I believe the governor's counsel is entitled to make such an objection at this time is under Rule Paragraph D2, adopted by the committee yesterday, which Rule D, and I quote, Mr. Chairman, says, if and when witnesses are to be called, following additional procedures shall be applicable to hearings held for that purpose. Paragraph 1, the governor and his counsel shall be invited to attend all such hearings. Paragraph 2, objections relating to the examination of witnesses or to the admissibility of testimony and evidence may be raised only by the witness and his counsel, a member of the committee, Senate chief counsel or his designee, or the governor's counsel, and shall be ruled upon by the chair and presiding member. I had interpreted this, Mr. Chairman, perhaps I'm in error, as giving me the opportunity as governor's counsel to object to a question that I consider improper.
Mr. Chairman, I think it is imperative that we go forward with a line of questioning, but I think also there needs to be room for objections. But the one thing that I can't understand, and I'm not that familiar with a court process or anything else, but it seems that we're getting back and forth into lawyers and legal issues much more than we are in the real substance of what we're trying to find out. And I don't know of any courtroom where a witness is on the witness stand with his attorney at his elbow and can talk back and forth with the attorney during the asking of a question or this sort of thing. I have no objection to either attorney objecting to a specific question, but I think the communication back and forth is more than is afforded to a witness in a court of law and far beyond what this committee intended.
Well, Senator Halford, of course, this is not a court of law. This is a legislative hearing with judicial overtone. Now, in relating to the attorney for Mr. Shively, Jeff Feldman, Mr. Shively asked the Rules Committee if he would be allowed to bring an attorney with him to be present, and we said yes, he could.
Mr. Senator Chairman, Gorch, I have Senator no objection Halford. To that at all. My only concern is that I think you can have a lot more communication on questions than simply an objection to the content of the question.
Senator Justison.
Mr. Chairman, I understand what Mr. Senator Halford is saying, and I think if we were to see an abuse of this, the chair could. That is, if we saw Mr. Shively being coached in his ear by counsel or any witness, I think that could be brought to the witness's attention and a ruling could be made. But I do want to point out that our Constitution is unique because the framers wrote in a specific provision about due process and protecting the rights of people during legislative investigations. I think we're the only Constitution in the country with that provision, and I think we would be well advised and will be more orderly to take the objections up as they're made, and I think counsel have been restrained, Mr. Chairman, and will continue to be
Senator
restrained.
Senator Ray.
Well, just to alleviate Senator Hopper's ideas or complaints, the Senate counsel has far exceeded his privileges in the court of law. He's been asking leading questions and hearsay and the rest of it. And certainly, if you were in a court of law, the witness, his attorney, would be able to object to the judge, and I think that's what Mr. Lacaberry was saying.
Okay, I
have no problem with an objection.
I would ask the Senate Chief Counsel if he has remarks on Mr. Lacaberry.
I think Mr. Lacaberry is correct that during the course of my examination of a witness in this process, he should be permitted to make objections and to speak to the committee and chair.
We go forward then. Mr. Lacaberry, is your objection... Have you spoken your objection yet, other than the objection?
No, I haven't, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The objection is simply that I believe Senator Chief Counsel is attempting to recharacterize the witness's testimony and is not, as the witness and his counsel have emphasized, recharacterizing it correctly. And obviously he's attempting to prove something that the witness has denied being able to testify to, namely the proposition that the governor received calls from Mr. Arsenault after the October 2nd meeting. I think the witness has said 5 times that he has no information that any such calls were received. Thank you.
May I respond to that, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Cash?
The question was asked and answered this way, that there were such calls from Mr. Arsenault to the governor and from the governor to Mr. Shively during the life of the project, which included periods after October 2nd, 1984. Perhaps I can just leave it at that. I was attempting merely to get the witness then to say what would be perfectly consistent with that answer, that therefore there could be some of the calls after October 2, 1984, because it's consistent with the answer. But I'm perfectly willing to leave his answer as he wants to keep it without asking it again.
Shall we continue then?
Yes.
Chairman, I apologize. I did not mean for this to become this big.
Mr. Shively, during the period between October 2, 1984, and the signing of the lease, did Mr. Arsenault, to your knowledge, have discussions with the governor, either in his office, on the telephone, or on the lunch, or lunches, about the project?
Would you repeat the question, please?
All right. During the period between October 2, 1984, and the signing of the lease, did Mr. Arsenault, to your knowledge, have discussions with the governor, either in his office, on the telephone, or at lunches?
Not to my knowledge.
Excuse me. Is it your testimony that you have no knowledge of any discussions that Mr. Arsenault had with the governor at any meetings during that period?
No, that wasn't the question, as I understood. The question was confined to telephone calls, lunches, and...
Either one.
And one other, and meetings in the governor's office. Those were the three things you asked about, and I said, no, not to my knowledge. Now, your last question, as I understand it, was, do I have any recollection of any conversations between the governor to Mr. Arsenault in any setting? Is that now the question?
Oh, I'll ask that question. Do you?
Yes.
All right. Could you tell us about it?
it's my understanding that the governor at some point did discuss with Mr. Arsenault the problem of their pricing, and I don't know where that was or when it was.
And that's the only recollection you have of a discussion about the
project?
Specific
discussions. That's the only recollection I have.
Did you ever testify before the grand jury that, as a matter of fact, you would be surprised if Mr. Arsenault didn't bring up the subject at all when he met with the governor?
I don't recall. Hmm? I may have. I don't recall.
Charlie, how frequently during the day would you have occasion to see the governor?
Assuming he's in town, it would vary anywhere from one or two times a day to probably as many as a dozen times.
It would be true, would it not, that you had free access to the governor?
Yes.
Did Mr. Arsenault have free access to the governor?
Not in the same sense that I had.
But certainly he had, or is it true, that he had free access to the governor more than, say, any other private person or other private persons?
Not more than any other private person, no.
Would it be true that more than many private persons?
Mr. Frampton tried to take me down this line of questioning during the grand jury. Mr. Arsenault is a person who could come into the office, and assuming the governor was available then or sometime during that day, could get an appointment with him. That is something that perhaps not every citizen can get, but I have seen us many times since I've worked at the governor's office when citizens have showed up and wanted meetings, fit them into the governor's schedule. So he is not in any sense unique in that ability.
Does the governor, Mr. Shively, or his staff keep a diary listing his daily activities?
I don't know about a diary. There is a schedule.
And could you tell us just a little bit about how that schedule is kept? Who keeps the schedule?
Cheryl Barsness, the governor's secretary.
And would that schedule usually reflect most of the meetings that are scheduled with the governor?
It would have most of them, but not necessarily all of them.
Would Mr. Arsenault's meetings with the governor ordinarily be put on that schedule?
It would depend on how the meeting came about. If the meeting came about by him calling in advance and saying, I want a meeting and I'll be there at 10 o'clock, yes, it would have. If he showed up that morning and said, I'd like to see the governor, then chances are it would not.
Would that type of a meeting with the governor occur often? Is Mr. Arsenault showing up and then having a meeting with the governor?
Not often, no.
Could you describe the governor's suite for us? Is there a reception area and personnel who work in that reception area?
The governor's office.
Yes.
What we call the third floor, actually.
Yes.
Well, there's an entryway, and at that entryway is a receptionist who also answers the phone. Right behind her, on the other side of the corridor, is a security guard. And behind the security guard is sort of a half wall. To get by that half wall, there's sort of a little waiting area. There's also a waiting area out by the receptionist. And then past that waiting area is another little secretarial area where the governor's secretary sits and I sit. And on either side of those are two rooms, the governor's office on one side and mine on the other. Or my
now, in those areas that you just described, about how many staff people would have desks or places to be?
In the sort of open areas you're talking about?
The various areas you described.
Well, there's a desk for the receptionist, which is one, a desk for the security guard, which is two, the two secretaries, and that makes four, and then in the two offices I mentioned, the governor's and my office is one desk apiece, his and his, and my former desk and my office.
Now, if someone wanted to make an appointment to see the governor, how would he go about it? Say, Mr. Arsenault, if he wanted to call. Who would he call?
He'd probably call and ask for the governor's secretary.
Who?
The governor's secretary.
Then would it be your testimony that if he did come, that there would be a number of people who would be able to see his coming?
Yes.
He's coming in through the front door. Is there,
is
there a rear door to the governor's office?
Well, there is, but it's locked from the outside, and so, I don't have any recollection of Mr. Arsenal.
So unlikely Mr. Arsenal would enter that rear door.
That's right. A fire escape.
I think you testified before the grand jury that at the October 2 meeting between the governor and Mr. Arsenal, that you could have had lunch, you, Mr. Arsenal, and the governor. Have you had a chance to think about that anymore? Do you recall what you did have lunch?
I've had a chance to think about it. I cannot recollect it. I have had some indication from Lori Herman on the governor's staff that there was not a luncheon that day. But my recollection is no better, and I have a piece of information now that
But you do have recollections that there have been lunches at
yes.
times at which you
yes,
were
sir.
Present.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And the governor and Mr. Arsenal.
Yes, sir.
And during those lunches, would the subject of the project come up?
I believe they probably would have, yes. I don't have specific recollection of actual conversations, but...
Well, do you remember, and I refer you to page 209 of the transcript, when the question was put to you, Mr. Shively, do you have a specific recollection of talking about the Fairbanks lease at one or more of these lunches? And your answer was, I would be amazed that they didn't come up at any of the lunches I had with them. So I assume the issue came up at every one of them.
I remember saying that, but I think even if you look at that answer, I do not have any, that answer would also speak to the fact that I have no specific recollection of the subject coming up. And it was a speculative answer.
But your answer today before the committee would be the same as your answer you gave the grand jury.
It certainly could have come up. That statement may have been a little strong in front of the grand jury, but it is quite possible the subject came up.
Are you saying you were mistaken?
I'm not going to sit here and deny that the subject came up, but I don't have any specific recollection of it.
Now, my question, Mr. Shively, and again, I want this record to be clear, and I want to give you an opportunity to state it as you feel is your accurate recollection. I'm just asking you, then were you mistaken when you testified before the grand jury?
I think my statement may have been a little overly enthusiastic, yes.
Did there come a time when you became worried or concerned about what you and the governor had done for Mr. Arsenal and the Fifth Avenue Center?
I don't understand the question.
Huh?
I don't understand the question.
Do you recall testifying before the grand jury that there came a time when you threw away the original RFP that had the governor's initials on it?
Yes, sir.
Into a wastebasket.
Yes,
sir. Were you concerned at that time about anything that caused you to throw away the original RFP?
Yes, sir.
What were you concerned about?
I was concerned about the governor's public image. The documents had been requested by a reporter from the Fairbanks News Miner. It is, I think, no secret in the state that the governor has suffered a number of public relations difficulties. We were still sort of at the tail end of one of the major ones, which was the public perception of what was or what or was not done in the North Slope Borough investigation. And I was concerned that this was just one more opportunity for the press to take another crack at the governor.
But what you threw away was the original RFP.
Well, I don't know what you mean by the
I mean
original,
the RFP that was prepared. The bid document that was prepared prior to the October 2 meeting with Mr. Arsenal, which I think it's your testimony to the grand jury that you had reviewed and approved.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Was there anything in that bid document that caused you to be concerned about the governor's public image?
Yes, the fact that his initials were on it.
Well, what was there in the document that you say his initials are on that caused you concern?
It had nothing to do with what was in the document, Mr. Dash. Has to do with the fact that having his initials on the document was clear indication that he had read it.
He read it.
And there's nothing illegal about that. Again, as I said, it was the press's perception of what role the governor did or didn't have in this, and that was what I was concerned about.
Well, I draw your attention, Mr. Shively, to this particular document was the document prior to the October 2 meeting with no changes had taken place. It called for competitive bidding, did it not?
That's correct. But that document, that was not the only copy of that document in existence. I'm sure there were probably several, if not a number, or not a dozen or more, over at DOA. It was not an attempt to get rid of what I thought was the only document.
I still would like you to tell the committee what in that document could cause the governor to have any problem with public
interest. As I indicated to you, nothing in the document. It was the governor's initials on it and the fact that he had read it and reviewed it that I was concerned about.
Is there a problem with the, from your point of view, of the governor reading and approving a bid document?
Not a legal problem, no.
Even a public image problem?
Yes.
Was it really that it wasn't just a bid document, it was a bid document that might be available for Mr. Arsenal to bid on? But his name wasn't on it, was it?
Mr. Arsenal's name?
Yes. Was his name anywhere in that document?
No.
What actually caused you to take that action? Was there an event?
Well, yeah. It was the call from Stan Jones, who was a reporter from the Fairbanks News Monitor.
And at the time he called you, what had occurred with regard to that project?
I'm not...
Was that bid with the governor's initial bid document, with the governor's initial on it, still the operative document?
No.
So what had occurred since that time?
A sole source decision had been made and a bid had been let.
And your concern, you say, was that when Stan Jones called you...
Maybe I can help you a little bit by this to let you understand that I was aware at the time that there were files in the Department of Administration with memos in it, which I think were made available to the grand jury, that indicated that the governor's office had, from their perspective, interfered unduly in this lease. And I suspected that what Mr. Jones wanted was a story about the governor being involved in a lease given to one of his campaign supporters, and I just felt that was not a necessary thing to go to, and it was not necessary to have that document go to Stan Jones.
So you believe that that original bid document, plus what other materials that you might have, which reveal the train of events, Mr. Arsenal's request, the changes ultimately going to a sole source, could in fact create some public concerns for the governor.
Yes.
On another occasion, Mr. Arsenal, excuse me, Mr. Shively, you testified that you called Laurie Herman and told her that I think prosecutors had learned about the giving of the RFP to Mr. Arsenal. Is that correct?
I didn't call her. I saw her and told her that, yes.
And what information or what advice did you give her?
I told her she ought to go call Mr. Arsenal.
And did you give her some advice as how she should make that call?
I suggested that she call Mr. Arsenal outside the office.
And was that what caused you to have that concern?
I don't know. By that time, I'd just finished 2 hours of being interviewed by the state's chief prosecutor, something that I thought was an issue that would be perhaps publicly debated in the press, but I never thought any criminal implications was getting into an area I never thought it would go. There's no question I was nervous. I did something stupid. There isn't any good reason for that. I knew at the time that the state has the ability to trace any phone call that's made in this state from one phone to another, that those phone records are readily available to state's prosecutors, and I don't have a good explanation for why I did it.
Did you have, was the concern, did the concern involve your feeling that the governor himself might have a public problem with that?
Well, as I've already stated, I've always been somewhat concerned about what the public image problem would be. So, I mean, that was still in the back of my mind, yes.
And with regard to that particular event, providing the RFP by the governor to Mr. Arsenal, was that something that you thought might create a public image problem for the governor?
Yes, I thought it could.
Then again, Mr. Shively, you testified that in your unsworn testimony with the prosecutors, you lied on a number of events regarding the project. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why did you lie?
basically to protect the governor.
So it's true, is it not, that these acts that you took to protect the governor? And you thought that the governor had something to be protected from?
Yes, sir.
As a matter of fact, did the governor have concerns himself about these matters?
Not to my knowledge, and we never discussed them.
Give me 2 points. I refer you to your testimony before the grand jury at either page 263 or on volume 10, 2471. And you recall, you're being asked by one of the grand jurors, so it is fair, towards the top of the page, so it is fair to say that the governor did have some concerns about how you went about entering this lease in terms of Lenny Arsenal approaching you with information. Answer, I don't think he had concerns about Lenny approaching me with information and me using it. I think what he had concern about was, if this was done, what the public concern might be. Is that a correct answer to that question, Chauvin?
That's a correct answer.
So is your answer to my question to you that the governor did have some concern, that he did?
Well, if there were concerns, they related to the fact that whenever there's a sole source lease, those issues can be raised publicly.
And the governor was aware of the sole source lease, and the events leading up to it, was he not?
He was aware of the sole source lease. I don't know about the events leading up to it. And what you mean by events?
Well, isn't your testimony the events leading up to it from October 2, 1984, in the meeting of the governor's office? He was aware of that meeting, wasn't he, then?
I can't speculate. I have not read the governor's testimony. I have been advised by my counsel, because during the grand jury process, I was the target of the grand jury investigation, not to discuss these issues with the governor. I have not discussed them with him since. I do not have knowledge of what the governor does or doesn't remember. I don't have direct knowledge.
My question to you is not an effort to get you to tell this committee what you think the governor remembers, but consistent with your earlier testimony before the committee has been that the governor was present at the meeting, and the governor did receive a report from you after the changes were made, and your present testimony that he was aware of the sole source contract, and your testimony that he was concerned about the public view of that sole source, that my question to you is, are those events part of the concern you have testified to before this committee?
I apologize, but you need to go over that again. I mean, what's confusing me is what you mean by events and asking me what the governor was or wasn't aware of.
The governor, you said, was concerned about the fact that there was a sole source contract.
Wasn't concerned about the fact that there was a sole source contract. He was concerned that there could be some public relations problems with that sole source contract, as there can be with any sole source contract.
And is it your testimony that the events leading up to that, which you've testified today, which includes the request by Mr. Arsenal, the changing of the RFP, the resulting sole source contract, and what report you gave the governor, was not part of that concern?
Were the events part of that concern? Part of the governor's concern?
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Carolina, don't quit burning tobacco.
We have a stenographer that has to change the tape at this point. I hope we're going to take an exactly a 10-minute recess. Be back here in 10 minutes exactly. Thank you. Will the Rules Committee please come back to order? That concludes Chief Counsel Sam Dash's questions of John Shively. We'll now proceed to questioning of Mr. Shively by the Governor's Counsel, Mr. John Conway. Mr. Conway is sitting up front at the stand so that he can see Mr. Shively while he's asking questions. Would you proceed, Mr. Conway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for permitting me to stand back here so that we could have a face-to-face dialogue. Mr. Shively, I want to take you back to the time frame late September, early October of 1984, and more specifically, those days immediately preceding October 2nd and those days that follow. And my question to you, sir, is could you describe for us what activities and major events the governor's office was involved with during that time frame, as best you recall?